Ticket City presents Why You Go to the Game to see Georgia Southern.
The play is known simply as the run. Peterson took a handoff up the middle, broke a tackle at the line of scrimmage, spins away from the next defender he meets, and he shakes off a diving tackler. 30 yards down the field, he meets another defender and literally throws him out of the way with his right arm, grabs him by the shoulder pad, and swipes him off onto the sideline. It was really so surreal because the place is going completely berserk during the run until he throws off that defender. He throws off that defender, the whole place went silent, stone silent, like an intake of breath. It was just so amazing. Nobody had ever seen it before. And then, of course, the place exploded again after they all caught their breath.
Put yourself in the action with Ticket City. Visit SavannahNow.com/sports and click on tickets.
Oh, he will. Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
Down the sideline. If he can get loose, he's gone. Eligue will score.
The Wesley Fields. Touchdown. Georgia Southern.
All right. Hello, Eagle fans, and thank you for joining us on the Georgia Southern Extra Podcast. I'm Travis Jadon, the Georgia Southern beat writer for the Savannah Morning News. And I'm going to say it right off the bat, Greg. Georgia Southern is one win from bowl eligibility at 5-1. And regardless of how it happened. They got to the fifth win. So we have a lot to talk about now that the Eagles are back from Texas. And so we're joined, by Greg Talbot from WSAV. Greg, how are you today?
Started from the bottom, now we're here. Just like the Eagles, baby.
So we have a lot of stuff to go over today, guys. And we'll start, as always, with our four downs. I'll start with first down. Greg, I've said this a bunch of times, and me and you have talked football a bunch of times, either high school or college or pro. I think that good teams find a way to win one or two games a year where they don't play well. And if you're not a good team, you're going to lose games where you do play well, and you're obviously going to lose the games where you don't play well. But Georgia Southern found a way to win 15-13 over Texas State on Thursday in a game that I think is safe to say they did not play well. And, although Chad Lunsford said 15 is more than 13, there's a lot of things that were left to be desired after that game. But I will say this, at the very least, they got there, they found a way to win, they made a play or two on offense, and they made a bunch of plays on defense and special teams. And so they're 5-1 and 3-0 in the Sun Belt, and that's better than the alternative.
Yeah, which leads me to my second down, which is if you're gambling on midweek college football, always take the points. The spread was, 18.5? Yeah. No, just that's not my second down. My real second down is it shows that we were right to think that this team, despite their really good record, does have some very real vulnerabilities. Because there is, at least in my Twitter experience with this team this year, there are two kinds of fans. There's one group of fans that tend to be very rational. They're like, you know what? Yeah, they're good, but we're probably not going to beat App State right now. And then, just like every fan base has, there are some homers who think we're going to go out and win the Sun Belt Conference, mm-hmm. Just based off, legacy or just being a fan.
Or that South Carolina State. Yep,
or being a fan and a homer. I find myself always siding with the first group of fans, and more than ever right now, because there are always going to be games where, because of the matchup or because of injury or because of whatever, that your vulnerabilities get exposed. Some vulnerabilities got exposed, but here's the thing. I think Chad Lunsford is such a conscientious and reflective head coach in the way he views his team. I didn't ask him this exact question on the Monday press conference. I actually assume he views what happened last Thursday as kind of a gift, because it gives them a chance to really see, against a team that should not have been a close game, they saw what their shortcomings were in a real way. I think it's going to give them a chance to kind of refocus and redouble down on what needs to change.
Yeah, and if anything, this game coming up this week, and we'll talk all about the New Mexico State game on Saturday. This game was looking to be a trap game or some sort of a trap game coming ahead of the Appalachian State game. But at the very least, Georgia Southern's gotten, like Lunsford said, they got the flight out of the way more or less across the country, and they're going to do that again this week. They're going to go out a day early this week. So at least they got a bad game out of the way, and they'll be coming off of a poorly played game ahead of New Mexico State. So maybe it's less of a trap game this week. So for me, my third down is that after the game, Lunsford said that the offense was working on a limited playbook, and you know, it showed because they scored, they had 215 total yards to 242 for Texas State. 215 yards from a team that, that holds the ball as long as Georgia Southern does is not great.
And how many did they have against Arkansas State just 2 weeks ago? I mean, over 300.
Yeah, I mean, significantly more. So against Arkansas State, they had 409 total yards.
Yeah, so that's
394 against South Alabama the week before. So that's not good. And you guys don't need us to tell you that Texas State's defense is not a top-tier defense in any sense of the word. So... okay, so they go into the game with a limited playbook offensively, and it shows. They score 15 points. And Lunsford said it's because it was off of a short week. Well, that, you know, my mind automatically went to what happens when you play another game on a short week?
Against the best team in the conference that should be in the top 25.
Right, against Appalachian State. Are you going to go into Appalachian State on October 25th, or are they going to come to you in Statesboro and you're going to have a limited playbook? I hope not, you know, because if you're scoring 15 points against Texas State, who is giving up, you know, 30-something a game, then your odds for App State do not go well. Now, I don't know that they're going to do that. You know, maybe they've already started kind of semi-preparing for what they're going to install for App State. But if they go in with a playbook as limited as the one against Texas State looked, then they're in big trouble. So that worried me off the bat.
Yeah, and I was a little confused when you said that it was off a limited playbook because... they, even dating back to Arkansas State and South Alabama, that playbook didn't look limited. We saw them running options and play-action deep passes and running out of the Maryland eye. So maybe they just called less plays, but I didn't see any less formations. So I'm still a little confused as to what exactly the percentage they didn't go with was.
Yeah, and that's something maybe we'll have to ask Lunsford and the staff, but... either way, the lack of diversity in the option, and I think they pitched the ball. I was listening to Danny Reed, the voice of Georgia Southern. I think they pitched the ball four times and then ran the up the middle 36 times. So that's not, you know, that's not the variation you want with an option offense, but we'll talk plenty more about what happened in the Texas State game coming up. Greg, what do you got for fourth down?
Fourth down is, and this is just a reality of football at every level, and I was kind of hoping for such great things out of this team that I was hoping they could avoid this. I think we all just have to accept that injuries are going to hamper this team, and it's going to be part of the narrative, and it's not going to be something they can escape. We are going to have injuries for the linebackers for the rest of the year. Thank God Shai Wirtz got back in the game after he was taken out briefly in the fourth quarter. And we'll talk about this later in the podcast, too. It sounds like they're going to be missing Wesley Fields this week. So for a team that really had high hopes and still has high hopes, I think injuries are going to play a real factor in the second half of the season and all these games that matter. And I think it's just something we have to accept and deal with and maybe not expect too much to cover the spread out of games where we know they have key guys gone.
Yep. So, all right, let's get into kind of – let's review Texas State real quick, Greg, and some of the things that we saw in the game. And then we'll get into what we think is coming up with New Mexico State. So, Greg, first, I wanted to talk about Texas State a little bit. And
well, you were there. So, so before you get into your game notes, first of all, I want to know, was there the sense of, like, the Grim Reaper standing over that program like has been reported once you got there?
Yeah, it was. And it was tangible. You could feel it because outside of the stadium in San Marcos.
No tailgating.
Well, here's the thing. There was a lot of the tailgating, but it just wasn't happening right outside of the stadium. It was kind of everyone just doing their own thing pretty far off away from the stadium. And I'm thinking, well, maybe it's a Thursday night game. Maybe they rallied. Or maybe even all these fans are going to come in just to hold their signs, you know, to fire their athletic director and fire their head coach. None of those fans came in. They had, I think, barely 9,000 people showed up.
Didn't want to spend the money.
Yeah, I don't blame them. But here's the thing about Texas State Stadium. They do sell alcohol inside the stadium. So if you're going through a 1-5 season, there's plenty of numbness to go around there.
God bless the great state of Texas.
Yeah, that's right. And they'll tell you too. All right, so I wanted to talk about a couple of things, a couple of decisions that Everett Withers made. And the reason why I want to do that is because these things that we're about to talk about that I think are more than questionable decisions from Everett Withers are things that we haven't seen Georgia Southern do. So we haven't seen super obvious play calling mistakes or obvious timeout mistakes and things like that. And those things, you know, do matter. And Texas State is proof of that. On the first drive of the game for Texas State, they basically walked right through the Georgia Southern defense. They were doing whatever they want. They were gashing them on the ground. Tyler Vitt, I think, had six completions on the first drive alone. And they get down there, and those who saw the game, they, you know, we know they get down there close, and they're first and goal from the three, they're second and goal from the one, and they eventually get to fourth down and goal from the 1 yard line. And what they call is a shotgun read option play that's blown up in the backfield, I think, by Chris Harris, the linebacker. And for me, I don't mind from shotgun. I don't mind if the quarterback runs from the one on fourth and goal. I don't mind if the running back runs on fourth and goal. But to have a play where you're deciding on who you're going to hand it off to after the ball snap from the 1 yard line is questionable.
When you know Southern's going to bring the house.
Right. And you know that Southern is not going to, I mean, they're not going to respect a pass when there's one wide receiver. I think there's one wide receiver in the game. It's pretty obvious it's going to be a run. So don't make your freshman quarterback on the first drive of the game on national TV have to decide if he's going to keep or hand it off on the 1 yard line. It just didn't make any sense. And especially, you'd been moving the ball the whole time without any trickery. So that was decision one for me that was questionable.
It was just a weird play calling game on both units, on both sides of the ball. You mentioned the, and I saw this on Twitter too, a lot of people were saying, what, for the first time this year, people said, what is DeBess doing? Mm-hmm. And we'll get a little bit more into that later too. But this was the first game that we have watched where for both sides, I was like, I wish I could be in the booth listening to the coordinators because I'm having a hard time understanding a lot of the play calls.
Well, I'm surprised you couldn't hear some of the Texas State coordinators from Savannah because those guys were fired up the whole game. And you could tell that they, I'll say this, the program seemed down and the people around the program seemed down. The people inside the program, the coaches, the players, at least the one that we talked to, and the head coach Everett Withers, they seem motivated and they're at least aware of what's going on around them. So they know that they need wins and they know that this isn't going to fly. How good is that going to do them? I'm not sure. But a couple more decisions that kind of just, you know, befuddled me, honestly. The end of the first half, right before Josh Moon's interception, Tyler Vitt, the freshman quarterback for Texas State, is sacked, I think, by Raymond Johnson. And that put them at like 3rd and 15 with a running clock. I think it's a minute and a half left in the game. And they're on 3rd and long. And instead of letting the clock run, Georgia Southern wasn't going to call a timeout. Instead of letting the clock run, maybe punting back to Georgia Southern with a few seconds left in the half, Everett Withers calls a timeout to set up a 3rd and 15 play call from their own 25. And then he tries to take a shot, you know, with four wide, and Moon promptly picks it off. It leads to a Bass field goal, gives Georgia Southern a bit of momentum going into halftime. So that was another really questionable play call. And then finally, when Texas State scores the touchdown late in the game to make it 15-13, they call a timeout prior to their two-point conversion because they didn't have the right personnel on the field for the play that they wanted to run, is what Withers said. Two things for me. The whole drive is happening for Texas State. You know if you score, you have to go for two. Okay, so somebody on your staff should be preparing for a two-point play if you don't already have a plethora of plays ready to go for two-point conversions. To score a touchdown and then not be able to get the right 11 on the field and call a timeout, you forced yourself into making Georgia Southern go three and out on the ensuing drive or the game's over. So, and then you come out of the timeout and it's a back corner fade pass against Kendall Vildor. So I understand why the Texas State fans are frustrated after watching what I saw on Thursday night in San Marcos.
Yeah, despite the fact that was a two-point game that should have been an absolute blowout,
yeah,
I guess there's going to be a contingent of Texas State fans who thinks that this game was basically
that's fine. We'll let them
a moral
that
win for them.
Have that.
I can also see the rest of their realistic fans. I can see every frustration.
Yeah.
That was some high school coaching we saw out of them, play calling situationally. And that, frankly, that all falls on the head coach. I mean, that's not a coordinator's job to set that up. That is a, when you sign up to be a head coach, you often relinquish your play calling duties in favor of situational awareness. I mean, that's borderline malpractice.
Yeah. And again, you know, if the fans weren't caring about wins and losses, then I would say give him all the time in the world. But they clearly are passionate about it, and I would understand if I had to sit and watch four quarters of that. And another thing is their freshman quarterback, Tyler Vitt, was removed in the second half. He wasn't playing excellent, but they brought in Willie Jones, who was promptly sacked for a safety. I didn't understand that move. Then you bring Vitt back. He drives you all the way back down the field and nearly ties the game. After the game, Coach Withers would not confirm whether Vitt would be their quarterback moving forward. Another questionable decision. But we'll move off of Texas State. I just had to get that off my chest because there was at least a half dozen things I could have questioned about that game. Let's talk about that game from a Georgia Southern standpoint and what happened on offense. We could talk, I think, for hours on end about what didn't happen on offense for Georgia Southern, and that's basically production. Because that, you know, there wasn't a lot of that on the field. What struck me, Greg, was that I think Westfields had 15 first half carries to Monteo Garrett's one, and then,
which is so weird because in the South Alabama game, Monteo had his best game of the year. I mean, his first four carries, he was averaging 10 yards a carry and went over 100 yards. So I couldn't understand the immediate flip from his best game of the year at South Alabama to, like, not getting any touches.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing, that kind of separation in carries is the kind of thing that led, that I think Lunsford was talking about in the limited playbook. But here's the thing. I know that Texas State purposely took away the exterior running plays, the outside running plays.
Which is the right, that's the right call when you're playing Southern, frankly.
For sure. I think so, too.
They have shown that they can go up the middle. Outside of that first game, which I think was an anomaly, it was week one against South Carolina State. They just couldn't get anything going up the middle. Since then, they have showed that, yes, they are better when they get shy into space. They run the option. He's going to pick up 15 yards every time. By bringing the house on the edges, you do eliminate a lot of their opportunity to do that. So I think if you're another member of the Sun Belt who's got to play Southern, Texas State showed you something.
Yeah, at the very least, Texas State put the book out on what you can do to stop Shy Words.
Just to limit Shy.
To limit Shy, yeah, and Monteo Garrett. But Monteo Garrett's one carry, you know, he could still get three or four carries in the first half up the middle. That's allowed. You know what I mean? He's not made to go outside on the pitch plays. But, you know, I guess they just wanted to keep riding Westfield, and he ended up with 26 carries, I think 93 yards. The 26 carries was the most in the Sun Belt Conference this year from any player.
You know what's really interesting about what they're doing with the running backs this year is traditionally the option offense, at least with Southern the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, it seems like it's like every option-based offense is 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards,
right.
40 yards. It seems like Shy's the one getting all the 40-yard plays. I mean, we haven't seen any huge breakaway runs for touchdowns. We saw Westfields against South Alabama or Arkansas State go 40 yards, get taken down inside the five. Have we seen a Matt Breida-style breakaway running back touchdown?
No, not from a running back. They did have that one Wes Kennedy reverse, but
yeah, I mean, we just haven't seen that out of the backfield from a running back. We've seen it from Shy. We've seen it from Wes. We just haven't seen it from the running backs.
And speaking of Kennedy, well, let's touch on this real quick. We talked about Monteo Garrett's lack of carries And, you know, I it's not even a lack of production. It's just a lack of opportunity on Thursday night. We saw Wirtz with 7 of 12 passing, which was eh. I mean, 7 of 12 is not a bad percentage, but just from watching the game, it wasn't his best performance. And Texas State did a decent job of getting pressure on him. All 7 of his completions were to 7 different receivers. One of those receivers was not Wes Kennedy, the leading receiver on the team. So you could look at that glass half empty, glass half full. He's spreading the ball around, or that once again, like Clemson, they neglected to get probably their best offensive playmaker a touch.
And I haven't watched the All-22. I haven't watched the film back. I was just kind of enjoying the game in the moment in the sports office at WSAV. But it also shows that the X factor can possibly be eliminated with the right defensive scheme up.
Right.
I don't blame... I mean, believe me, when we have had our weekly ESPN 3 coaches meetings with Bob DeBess and Chad Lunsford ahead of our live broadcast for the home games, they say, like, yeah, Wes Kennedy is... I mean, he's going to be our playmaker. Like, he's our guy. That's not... If you watch their big games, that's not a surprise. He's a leading receiver. He's leading the conference in all-purpose yards. Like, he's the guy. It's not that they didn't try to get him the ball. And if I watch the game back this week, which I will, I think what I'm going to see is Texas State found a way to always have one guy on him, and maybe two. Like, I would bet money that they, entering this game, they said, we're going to stop the outside run and we're going to stop Kennedy.
And that's completely understandable. I mean, it's not as if Kennedy... Yeah, I'm not naive enough to think that they just said, hey, this isn't a game we feel like getting Kennedy the ball. Obviously, they made efforts to get him the ball, and they got it to him one time. He, I think, had a 9-yard run. But if Wes Kennedy is taken out of the game, that cannot mean that your offense is going to score 15 points and that you're going to put up barely over 200 yards of total offense. You have to be
against
able,
a bottom three team in the conference.
So if they're going to take away one thing, the outside run, and then one player, Wes Kennedy, you had better be able to adapt and figure something else out. Now, again, they did figure out a way to win, and I think they are playing, as Lunsford likes to call it, a complementary style of football. Shy Wertz is not turning the ball over. You know, he's not taking a bunch of big sacks for losses. And so sometimes I think they're just content with letting their top-tier defense win them a game. And that's fine by me. I get the sentiment behind that. But my thing is, if one player or one play is taken away, is this what Georgia Southern is going to look like? And for Georgia Southern fans' sake, I hope not. But, you know, that's something to keep an eye on this week. I can imagine that a New Mexico State team, which sometimes deploys five linebackers in one unit, is going to surely take away the outside pitch and the outside run.
And Kennedy.
And Kennedy, yeah. So they had better find a way to adapt. And with extra days, I'm sure DeBess and Lunsford have come up with something, I hope they have, to kind of answer that call. Anything else from the Texas State game, Greg, from you before we move into New Mexico State?
I want to hear from you what the press box conversations were. I mean, I know you were trying to make deadline, but what were people saying on both sides after the game in the press box? Because I always find those to be some of the most enjoyable conversations on the weeks I call games.
Yeah, and it was you know, the beat writers covering the team, especially Kef Chardello, who we had on the podcast last week. He was sitting right next to me in the press box, and the first drive that New Mexico or the Texas State had, they're moving the ball, and I'm kind of joking with them, like, man, this looks like the 2007 Pats. Like, this offense is something else, man. How are we going to stop this? And he kind of stayed quiet, and then they get down there on fourth and goal and call that just ridiculous read option on fourth and goal from the one, and he just looks at me and goes, "Welcome to San Marcos."
Oof.
Yeah. And so I was like, it's good to be here. So that was something. And then after the game, before he walks down to the presser with his coach Withers, after the game, I was like, what are you going to ask him? What do you got for him? What'd you think? And he said the first thing he was going to ask him was why the back and forth at the quarterback position? Why take out at 1-4, why take out a freshman quarterback that seems to have some promise and at least a little bit of raw playmaking ability? Why keep removing him? And then why do you not continuously go to probably one of the better tight ends in the entire country in Keenan Brown? How does he only have 5 targets in the game? And so those are two things that
sounds like, from what I've read about the Texas State coach, though, it sounds like he's not a guy who's actually going to answer those questions.
No, he's not. And actually, he's going to be pretty upset at you for even asking or even thinking about asking. So, but Kef didn't.
How dare I?
Yeah, Kef didn't really mind that. But those are some things they were saying. I think they have kind of a joyful look at it, almost a comical look at it, because there's a lot of things that are comical going on in that program.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is brought to you by The Big Calendar at DoSavannah.com for all your arts and entertainment needs. And to get a bird's eye view of everything going on in the city, check out DoSavannah.com and SavannahNow.com.
Let's go ahead and get into New Mexico State, which is Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern, kickoff from Las Cruces, which is super fun to say. If you haven't said it, I encourage you to go ahead and start saying it a lot. Las Cruces, New Mexico, for New Mexico State and Georgia Southern. Another team that Georgia Southern has, on paper at least, a big advantage over. Las Vegas right now on Wednesday afternoon has it as a 13-point spread with
Georgia. That's going to move.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of heavy money would be on New Mexico State, I would think, just because that's a pretty big spread for a team that beat Georgia Southern last year.
And if Wesley Fields is indeed not going to play, and if there are still these many injuries, yeah, and they're going, I would take the points.
Let's jump into that real quick. So there's no confirmation about...
I love how this has turned into a gambling podcast, by the way, over the last couple weeks.
Just for any of those who are just betting with their friends.
Entertainment purposes only.
Only betting with your friends, yeah. So 13 points is a lot for me. Wes Fields and Sean Freeman both hurt in last week's game. Fields played the majority of the game. Obviously, he wasn't in on every snap, but he played from first quarter to fourth quarter. What I've been hearing and seeing is that there's a groin injury to Wes Fields and that he's not going to play on Saturday. The school hasn't confirmed it. And the same for Sean Freeman. It sounds a lot like he's not going to play on Saturday, the senior safety. So that is, I think Wes Fields obviously is a huge loss if they don't have him out in New Mexico. And to not have Sean Freeman adds, you know, some more pressure to the back end. I do think the secondary is probably the one place where you could afford to lose one guy at a time, just with Kendall Vildor and Monquavion Brinson being so good. But if Wes Fields doesn't go, then now you're looking at, a steady dose of Monteo Garrett, who we just went over, obviously isn't too comfortable running the dive, or else he would have gotten more than one carry in the first half on the dive play. And then you'll have Logan Wright and Speedy LaRoche in some order.
Yeah, I was going to say, Matt LaRoche has shown some really...
He's really impressive.
Well, yeah, and he's of the three, he's the true freshman, and he has shown really strong ability to find a hole and accelerate through it. Mm-hmm. I think it is an apt comparison when someone on Twitter said he looks like Breida, the way he finds a hole and just breaks through for 20 yards. And it was against South Carolina State. But I think my money is on LaRoche being the one who we see get the most play.
Yeah, and me too. And the way that they've been deploying them, it seems like LaRoche is the third guy. But on the depth chart, at least this week, and we know how flexible that depth chart is. Flexible is one word you could use for it. On the depth chart, at least, Logan Wright is above Matt LaRoche. Right. But, you know, for me, LaRoche has gotten first half carries in multiple games. Logan Wright has not. So that would signal to me, at least, that LaRoche is the next guy up. That's obviously going to be something that you guys should be tracking throughout the week, the status of Wes Fields and Sean Freeman. And then, you know, another week, another large quantity of linebacker injuries. So we'll just jump into that. Tomarcio Reese, Lane Ecton, we already talked about Sean Freeman, all left the game with injuries. And I think Ecton returned for a little bit, but I know Tomarcio Reese did not. So in Tomarcio Reese's stead was Chris Harris, the Savannah native out of Benedictine. And he played another really, really solid game out of the Mike spot in the linebacker unit, taking over for Todd Bradley and Rashad Byrd, who were both out prior to the game. So in their stead was Chris Harris, who had an awesome game. And I think that maybe these injuries that occurred earlier in the year, Tomarcio Reese's has been nagging and kind of, you know, he's doing everything to get on the field, but it's been tough to watch him play lights out while he's on the field and then kind of never be able to play all four quarters this year. So that's tough to see. Obviously, that's not, you know, his fault or anything like that. But it looks like the linebacker unit without Byrd and Reese will be really headed by Chris Harris and Jay Bowdry on the outside. Greg, do you think that all the injuries earlier in the year that forced Chris Harris to play, that forced guys like DeShawn Cooper to play, and even Randy Wade to play, has that helped this linebacker unit become deeper in a sense?
Well, I think especially in college football, when you have a strong defensive secondary and linebacker core, a lot of the time coaches will do what they do with their best wide receivers and running backs, which is just ride the ones and give the ones all the play. The fact that, there were games where they got their guys in a blowout on either side against South Carolina State, against Clemson, against South Alabama. Like, I'm glad that a lot of the twos and sometimes even threes have gotten play. It's good for this team. But I'm... Again, I don't have a dog in this fight. We didn't go to Southern. I'm worried about this linebacker core as we go deeper into the year because they've got a stretch here against App State, against Troy, against Georgia State. Like, they're about to go up against some big boys.
And they are, and they're gonna be tested. But I will say this about the linebacker unit, that they've responded to kind of really every kind of offense. Now, this week is a different animal. I'm not going to paint New Mexico State like, there's some juggernaut. They're not the 85 Bears.
It's a weird team. Can we just, when you want to get to it, I want to take you through the game.
Yeah, let's get to it now.
Okay, it's a weird team. Okay, so they got their teeth kicked in by Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Not a surprise. They got their teeth kicked in by Minnesota. Not a surprise. They got their teeth kicked in by Utah State. Not really a surprise. They lose by 22 to New Mexico. Not a huge surprise. Yeah. New Mexico's in the Mountain West. Then they beat UTEP. No, that's a game you should win. UTEP's one of the worst teams in the FBS.
Right.
But then they beat Liberty, who just beat Troy. They beat Liberty a couple weeks ago, and then they lose 66-38 to Louisiana Lafayette. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is a weird team. I will talk to their broadcaster. So it's on Aggie Vision. I know the play-by-play guy from my old minor league baseball days. His name is Adam Young. You'll enjoy his play-by-play of the game, I think. Very knowledgeable about the team and a good guy to listen to call a game. But I'm going to call him up this week because I have no idea. Like, I couldn't venture to guess what the final score of this game is going to be because this is a team that beat Liberty, who just beat Troy, and then they lose. They got doubled up by Lafayette. Like, it's a weird team.
Yeah, there's plenty of, like you said, weird things about this team. But I think, kind of what could change this game around or what could really just impact the game one way or the other is New Mexico State's ability to, first off, they're a spread offense that's going to throw the ball a ton. They're going to run 70 plays a game. And just for a reference point, Georgia Southern's running less than 58 plays a game right now. So they're gonna snap the ball quick and get going and pass the ball a lot. But what's gonna really impact this game, I think, especially with Georgia Southern's ailing linebacker core, is their ability to get the ball to their halfbacks in the passing game. And that's pretty clear when you look at their stat sheet because they're really do it all running back is Jason Huntley, and he's got almost 300 yards of receiving out of the backfield. And their kind of system under head coach Doug Martin is going to be predicated on getting the ball out quick, super quick. So automatically, the pass rush that's really been improving, and we haven't touched on that either, the pass rush with Logan Hunt and guys like Raymond Johnson coming on in the middle of the season is really going to be negated, I think, with New Mexico State's ability to get the ball out quick. And so I think really the biggest key in this game defensively for Georgia Southern is they had better be able to make the tackles one-on-one in space. And I think they can do that. But over and over and over again, when a running back is getting a reception, that pressure is going to be on you to make that tackle. And if you don't, they could gash you. And then if you string together one or two of those a drive, now the chains start moving, and it could be a long day at least defensively for Georgia Southern. But what's interesting about the New Mexico State team is that they're gonna throw it 40 times a game. They're averaging about 28 rushing attempts per game, and like we said, they're close to 70 plays a game. They're only holding the ball for 23 minutes a game.
Well, and here's something that is worth noting. So if you get rid of the first 3 weeks of the season, right?
Yeah.
Just take their last four games. Yeah, they've lost three of those four games, but in those, rather, they've lost two of those four games, but in these last four games, they've scored 25, they have scored 27, they have scored 49, they have scored 38. So they're losing, but they're putting points on the board,
yeah.
which leads me to believe that even though Southern is going to be favored here, this is a team that's not going to have trouble responding to points. Now, no matter who Southern's playing, the clock is always a bigger factor because mm-hmm. you're Georgia Southern and you don't stop the clock, you don't throw the ball. There's part of me that thinks that New Mexico State's going to be able to respond, and I would think Southern has a much better chance in this game if New Mexico State had been putting up 20 points a game over the last 4 weeks. They're putting up like, I didn't do the math, I mean, it looks like a, I don't know, 34 point average to me over the last couple weeks.
New Mexico State?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That, they're at 25 for the year, so yeah, it's well over 30 for the last few
that's
games.
Something that could be potentially worrying and another reason I might take the points.
What kind of struck me as interesting, though, Greg, is that they're a spread up-tempo team, and they're averaging only 334 per game total yards. Georgia Southern's averaging 332 per game as a triple option offense.
Doesn't mean they're good.
It doesn't.
New Mexico State. New Mexico State.
Yeah, New Mexico State. That doesn't mean they're good, but what's Georgia Southern's MO on defense? Bend, don't break. So right. they'll allow some of those 8, 9, 10 play drives, but then they kind of have
stop them at the three.
Yeah, they kind of have been buckling down on that side of the 50. Right. So that's something that I do think plays perfectly into Georgia Southern's favor. But the time of possession, which Bob DeVest has said, time of possession doesn't matter unless you're scoring points. So that is just brilliant football analysis there from DeBest. But 23 minutes a game, they're holding the ball, and the opponents are holding it 36 minutes a game. So they're getting out-possessed in the game, and they're heading into a game against a triple-option offense. That also works in Georgia Southern's favor. So just a few more notes on New Mexico State and kind of what they'll look like. We know Bob DeBest is super familiar with them coming from their rival New Mexico. On the other hand, they'll be super familiar with Bob DeBest and his system. New Mexico State, they are allowing an average of close to 44 points per game, which is not exactly great. That's ranked 125 in the country out of 129 possible FBS teams. Another kind of storyline, Greg, quickly, is that their linebacker, Terrell Hanks, is really something else. Probably one of the better linebackers that Georgia Southern's going to see all year. He hasn't played the last two games, and we don't know yet whether he will play, but he's number two in their linebacker core, and he's averaging almost 14 tackles per game. After having missed the last three games due to injury, Hanks is still fourth on their team in tackles. So he's not on their depth chart right now, but Lunsford seems to think he's going to play. I would trust Lunsford in that. I'm sure he knows more than just the released depth chart for New Mexico State. But if Terrell Hanks is in there at linebacker, at their Sam linebacker position for New Mexico State, he's certainly someone that Georgia Southern wants to key on. He's had tackle games of 11, 9, 19, and 15 this year. So if DeBest and Lunsford are going to be aware of him, I think so should we.
Yeah, they're just going to send him, I think. And it's easier when you're a tackling linebacker when you're playing a team like Southern, I
for
think.
Sure.
Because, yes, you're playing assignment football. You're playing the option. You can't just run to the quarterback every time. But they're going to send him through the gaps. And Southern's just going to have to keep him in their sights the whole way. The same way that when you're a defense playing Georgia Southern, you have your eye on Kennedy the whole time, too.
Yeah, and so he needs to be keyed on, and I think they will, obviously. Greg, let's begin to wrap it up here. I wanted to touch on something that I've seen on social media and understandably so. Bowl projections are beginning to come out, and bowl projections are beginning to kind of take shape as far as the conferences go and what bowl games they're aligned with. It looks like right now it'll be either the Camellia Bowl or the Dollar General Bowl for Georgia Southern, which is not great for those of us who may be attending the game. Mobile and Montgomery, Alabama are not.
What happened in the New Orleans Bowl?
Yeah, man, that would be something else if they made it to New Orleans. So
wouldn't that be so much more fun?
New Orleans, no offense to Mobile, Alabama or Montgomery, Alabama. They both seem like really nice spots, but probably not as nice as New Orleans. Greg, I wanted to ask you something, though. If those two games are not in the cards for Georgia Southern, Georgia Southern's 5-1 now. And bear with me here, okay? They're 5-1 now. If they finish unbeaten, and you're already shaking your head at me, if they beat App State and they run the table, just go with me to that place, okay? If they do that, would that schedule and that resume be good enough for a New Year's Six Bowl at what? That would be 12-1, right? 13-1 with a Sun Belt championship? Only loss coming at Clemson?
You'd have to play Arkansas State twice, beat them twice.
Right, so that's two wins against Arkansas State on your resume, a win against Troy, a win against App State.
You wouldn't have beaten a single top 25 team.
But you would have only lost to a top 5 team on the road. I think that would be six worthy.
It would certainly help them if App State somehow manages to jump into the top 25 by next week.
Right. Let me ask you this. If App State were to run the table, their only loss would be coming at Penn State. Would their resume be good enough for a New Year's Six Bowl? I think most of the country would say yes.
The country would say yes just because App State is so universally accepted to be the best team in the conference. I mean, if you look at the statistics, like I do for every ESPN 3 game, I look down and I go, oh my God, they're leading in every offensive category.
It's incredible, really, yeah.
And they almost beat Penn State. I think it would be a different argument if Southern had held with Clemson until late in the fourth quarter, you know?
Well, I'm going on record here saying that I think if they do run the table.
New Year's Six?
I don't think they're going to run the table, but if they were to, I think it would have to be at least in consideration for New Year's Six.
Now that we're halfway through the season, I'd be interested to hear what do you think the rest of the year is going to look like? How many and what games do you think are vulnerable / possible losses?
I think that every game is potentially a loss except for, I'm not sure that Coastal Carolina or I would say Georgia State.
I feel confident in Georgia State. I feel comfortable about that game by a touchdown.
Yeah, I do now, but I just, if I let myself click 2017 and click 2016 on their schedule and then look at how that game went.
Right.
Georgia Southern, even last year and how bad they were playing, they probably should have won that game. And so they'll have to prove that to me. But yeah, I think every game is
How confident do you feel in this App game next week?
Not too confident, to be honest, just because I think that App State has lost a couple of key players, including Jalen Moore, the really all-everything Sun Belt running back. That kind of opens up that game a little bit more, but I would say that App State's going to go into that game as maybe a 7.5 to 9 point favorite. Greg, is that how you see it?
I think 9.5 is probably what it'll start as and get closer to Southern as the week goes on.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, well, let's wrap it up here. I got one last stat, which kind of explains the Sun Belt and not in a good way, probably. There are 129 teams in the FBS. 5 Sun Belt schools currently are ranked 106th or worse in terms of points allowed.
Woof.
Georgia Southern will play 4 of those 5 schools this year. So 4 of those 5 Sun Belt teams are 106 or worse in the country. If you add UMass and New Mexico State onto that, 6 of the teams on Georgia Southern's schedule this year will be ranked lower than 100 on defense. So 6 of the 29, 100 through 129 teams will be on Georgia Southern's schedule. Also, you have to add Clemson and App State, who are both top 10 defenses. So it's either sink or swim for Georgia Southern. It seems like, over half of their teams on their schedule are really awful in defense, well below average. And then 2 of the teams, one team that they've lost to and one team next week that they'll play on Thursday night, is ranked in the top 10. So I found that interesting, and I think it says a little about the Sun Belt Conference as a whole and kind of the shift towards emphasis on offense, really.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think that's only going to continue to happen in college football outside of programs that actually truly mean to pride themselves on defense, which I think are becoming more and more rare.
and for good reason.
Yep.
Offense wins points, and that's sexier, even though this Georgia Southern team is not sexy.
It wins recruits.
Yeah, that's true, and that's really what matters going forward. But let's wrap it up, Greg. What do you guys have going on this week, and what do you want to tell the folks listening?
Kind of a cool situation we accidentally had happen at WSAV. So we put all our high school football games on the CW, which is that's still on every TV in Savannah if you have regular over-the-air TV. What happened was the CW is mad that we've been putting the games on, preempting their programming on Friday night, every Friday night during football season for the last 2 years.
Was that Charmed that comes on CW?
Whatever it is, yeah, so Supergirl reruns. So what happens, though, is we are taking over WSAV proper for the next three Friday nights. We are putting high school football on WSAV, our next three games, on actual WSAV. So like big time, big audience, big stage for the kids. This Friday is going to be Benedictine against Southeast Bullock, two undefeated teams in the region. This will likely decide the region championship in the Savannah Public region. Next week, we're going to go all the way up to Wade Hampton when they play May River. That should decide the AAA South Carolina region championship. And then in all likelihood, we will wrap up on WSAV on November 2nd with Wayne County, Ware County. That's going to be a 5A top 10 team matchup. Yeah. So we have three powerhouse games all on big WSAV for the next 3 weeks. We are super excited about that.
Yeah, and that game you guys have this Friday night, a team from Bullock County, from Southeast Bullock at 7-0, facing Benedictine, the school which Wes Kennedy and Chris Harris hail from. For us at Savannah, at the Savannah Morning News, you want to follow all of our coverage at savannahnow.com/sports or follow this podcast and other podcasts that we offer at savannahnow.com/podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jadon Sports, J-A-U-D-O-N Sports. And then also wanted to quickly just kind of get you guys thinking about basketball season. We are planning on doing a kind of...
What?
Yeah, that hoop season coming up.
What?
So we're planning on doing a Georgia Southern Extra podcast release probably about twice a month during the season. We won't start that in earnest until, obviously, the football season wraps up. We know that's where the focus is, but just wanted to get you guys thinking about that. And the Eagles should have a really, really good team this year in the Sun Belt.
I just don't have a life outside of football season for these 13 weeks. I mean, I like basketball, oh my God.
I love basketball, man.
Oh, I love college, and I love Georgia Southern basketball, but, like, man. Well, isn't that our job? Like, we just for 13 weeks, get completely obsessed with football, and when someone mentions a different sport, you're like, well, what? Who? What?
Part of the job, Greg. All right, well, thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully next time we talk to you, the team will be 6-1, hosting an App State game, which should be as lit as it gets.
That's going to be a good potty, man. It's going to be good.
Until next time, guys. Thank you.
Oh, he will. Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
Down the sideline. If he can get loose, he's gone. Iligwe will score.
The Wesley Fields. Touchdown. Georgia Southern.